attacked by a broken down tree.
There's a light in the window, two salty gals inside.
I'm not sure if they're witches, but you know that's implied.
Got the storytelling, ego swelling,
pillow talking, moonlight walking, sea hags.
Welcome to the Sea Hags Podcast. I'm Chris Jeppa.
And I'm Katie Norgren, and today we're going to explore the space with Colin Sharp.
Hello!
Who is a comedian and adorable.
Oh, there we are. That's a fine introduction.
You know, the most important part first, and then just what the people really came for.
Yeah.
In the end.
For a podcast.
For a
especially.
Podcast. They'll never know.
Yeah. I did like that on Facebook the other day, we were scheduled to be on the same show, and you were just like, oh, and only the softest boys get booked on these shows. I'm like, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, you know, Jackie, she loves a soft boy.
Oh, yeah.
Jackie is a soft boy, kind of. It was, yeah, I get confused for Jackie a lot, just because I have gay face, too, and hair, but... Like, I think Maddie and her look more alike than me and Jackie sometimes.
Yeah.
At least in terms of fashion, so. Just talking about people that people don't know if they listen to the podcast.
This is really inside Vancouver comedy baseball.
Yeah, it's inside baseball. It's not actually good podcast material, but, you know, get out of the way. Get it going. Great. How are you doing, Colin?
I'm doing all right. I'm on the rebound. I was sick, and now I'm less sick.
Mm-hmm. You got your, like, cup o' citron?
Yeah, but it's knockoff.
Oh, it's not the good stuff.
My girlfriend was nice enough to go get some Neocitrin, but I'm still going through the London Drugs brand.
For when they didn't have Neocitrin for like 2 years?
Yeah, it's just called Hot Lemon Relief.
I know! I have that exact same one. Hot Lemon Relief.
That just sounds like you're jacking a lemon off. Yeah. Like, this lemon's really sexy and I'm going to give it some Hot Lemon Relief.
This lemon is juicy.
Squeeze my lemons till the juice runs down my legs.
But I think I've offered you Hot Lemon Relief at my house before when you weren't feeling well.
It's possible.
You're like, I'll pass.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound good.
It sounds really bad. Does it have any like good drugs in there? Or
Like
it's better than nothing.
Well, it's you. I mean, you look at the ingredients list, mm-hmm. and even like the percentages on the medicinal ingredients are exactly the same. It's like scientists made it. They figured out what's going on.
I still think I like the name brand one. It knocks me out more somehow.
Yeah. Well, the name brand one. They look. I've become a bit of an expert recently.
Okay.
They've got more flavors and stuff.
They got so many flavors. You can get wild cherry.
Like, you might have...
Ew. Yeah. Sounds horrible.
Now,
sounds very bad.
Podcast listeners might not know this, but downstairs in the kitchen, I asked for a little bit of honey to go with this. And if you get the Neocitrin itself, they have a honey plus lemon flavor. You don't even need the extra honey.
Oh, wow.
I'd put it in, though.
Yeah, I still do.
That's how I'd do it.
Yeah, honey flavor is bullshit. You need the sweet, sweet medicinal properties of a good raw honey.
Of a good local honey, yeah.
A bee you know.
Yeah. It's from when I had like a neighborhood feast that I threw down at the P&E and like invited a bunch of people to come, and I got like a small neighborhood grant to put it on. And I asked everyone to bring some food. It was like a neighborhood potluck, meet your neighbors, etc. And this beekeeper showed up with like tons of tiny little jars of local honey that was made like just across the street, basically, which is lovely.
That's
and apparently
cool.
You're supposed to eat the, if you have bad allergies, you're supposed to eat the local honey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it kind of inures you to like the weird pollen and stuff like that.
God damn.
Yeah.
These are cool as shit.
Explain neighborhood grant.
It's I was like, look. Neighborhood. His name is Grant.
and he gives people money. Yeah.
Yeah.
he's a small neighborhood Grant. Yeah. He lives in one of those little book houses over there.
Yeah.
In a tiny library. Cute. I love Grant.
They should totally make a mascot for the grant program.
And his name is Neighborhood Grant.
Small Neighborhood Grant.
He's got the same mustache as you for some reason.
Yeah, sure,
I was actually picturing that exactly.
Yeah.
You could play him, basically. We'll get you green screened.
Yeah, a green screen.
Then you'll have you like, oh, these, there's so many books in these tiny libraries.
I think I'd wear a robe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like you've gone out to get your paper or something?
Yeah, not like...
And you locked yourself out, so now you live in the neighborhood?
Just like, not like just a robe, but okay. I'm just like a guy that puts a robe over my clothes for some reason. That's what I'm picturing for like a
Like a bathrobe or like a cassock? Or are we talking like a priest vestment?
Okay, so we've gone over what a neighborhood grant is. I want to know what a cassock is now.
It's a priest dress.
A priest, sure.
It's a dress a priest wears.
I just picture a man that just gives away money in the neighborhood as somewhat a man of leisure.
Mm. Okay, so it's like a smoking jacket type.
Yeah,
more than anything else.
It can be a
like
smoking
a classy
jacket.
Robe.
Yeah,
no, you're not going out there in a Snuggie or anything.
No, no. Or
proud Snuggie owner, Christina.
I mean, I'm not ruling it out.
I love my Snuggie.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
It's extremely warm.
Yeah, it should be. That's its whole entire job.
Yeah. It's a blanket with sleeves. Yeah. What are you going to do about it?
A slanket, if you will.
No.
No, you have brand loyalty.
Speaking of brand name loyalty, yeah, I'm definitely more of a Snuggie than a slanket girl.
Like, yeah.
It's bullshit.
Kleenex over whatever the
A small neighborhood grant is the Vancouver Foundation. It's like a local charity thing that gives scholarships and things like that. But you can apply if you have some kind of cute neighborhood project. Huh. So if you wanted to build a tiny library, for example. If you wanted to do a community garden. If it's like, I want to run workshops about canning. Or like some people put on the McSpadden County Fair at a park. And they had like zucchini races and stuff like that. It was very cute. You put little wheels
Go
on a
banana.
You put little wheels on your zucchini. You have to grow the zucchini yourself. You put little wheels on. You paint it up like a little derby car, and then you run it down a ramp.
Mine's number 69.
Just a real phallic zucchini.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to really stretch.
But like one of those zucchinis that kind of curves up, you know?
Yeah. What if I just put an eggplant in the race? Would that be okay?
Oh, man.
Believe it or not. So, my girlfriend grew up on Salt Spring Island. And
oh, wow.
I believe it.
We were just... Look, buckle your shit up. Because I'm a drop of reference to a local island.
A very nice local island.
Island that decided to make their own currency at one point. They have the Harvest Festival in Salt Spring,
and someone is sacrificed every year.
And every year. But one of the things that they do, we were looking into it, like, oh, hey, that would be a cool thing for me to, like, go over and, like, and she can show me around her homeland. And we're looking at, like, what happens as part of the Harvest Festival, and motherfucking zucchini races.
Apparently it's a thing.
It's part of it.
Wow.
And I'm looking through, like, the qualifiers and stuff, and they have, like, different divisions.
God.
Based on, like, whether or not the...
Varsity. Ultra heavyweight.
Triple A, yeah.
Welterweight. I'm trying to cruiserweight zucchini.
Yeah. But it's, they have different classes based on if the axle of your zucchini car's wheel goes through the zucchini or is part of a supporting system. So if there's a zucchini chassis or if the zucchini itself.
Oh, my God. They have so much time.
Yeah.
Don't
you just love when someone just cares about a thing?
Yes, so much. I love it so much because, like, I just don't have time to give a serious shit about any one thing. I feel like in Salt Spring, that's all they do.
Yeah.
Is you pick one thing and you focus on it to the exclusion of all else. It's my favorite place to be, other than Portland, maybe, because they're the same.
Yeah.
Kind of, you just go, and everybody's got a weird thing that they do, and they're all strange, and you don't...
So nice and generous.
I like to go there because I don't stick out. Like, I just look like I belong. So it's not like, even in Vancouver, I still feel kind of like, ah! No, I don't. It's fine. Everybody's weird here, but they're extra weird there. I was there once, and the Pride Parade started, and it was like... 18 people or something, because it's not a big community.
And you just joined in and walked with them.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. But it's great. She actually, so when did she move from Salt Spring?
Like 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she didn't, like, go to high school there or anything?
No, yeah.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, I got to. She got to experience the high school system of Richmond.
Oh, yeah. But Salt Spring has the only high school of the Gulf Islands, as far as I know. And so everybody, like, commutes by, boat bus. Or bus boat, I guess, is the...
Ferry?
Yes,
ferry is the correct word. It's a boat bus.
It's like, you know, it's a boat, but it's like a bus. Do they have a word for that?
I like that there's, like, throughout the Lower Mainland, there's, like, so many different unique forms of transportation that are different combinations of sea and land transit.
Yes.
And you settled on the only one that doesn't exist.
Sea bus, no. Aquabus.
Sea bus, aquabus, water taxi. None of them.
Okay, but a boat bus.
But a boat bus. Just,
what about a
it's almost Bolt bus, yeah.
It's almost Bolt bus. Yeah. The bus ride that never costs a dollar no matter what it tells you.
Yeah.
It's the kids that live on, I think it's like Gabriola, have to commute over to Nanaimo for high school, and there's signs all over the ferry that's like, any students, like, you have to follow this code of conduct.
Oh, wow.
I guess they're just such bad hooligans.
Bad hooligans.
You know, they just fuck up the ferry all the time.
Those Gabriola hooligans with their fresh berry pies and I don't know, smoked salmon? What would they have?
Alpacas.
Oh, that'll fuck up the ferry for sure.
Sorry, I brought my llama on this boat.
They're different animals, Chris! God damn it. A llama will really fuck up the boat. The Bolt bus.
But anyway, so a small neighborhood grant. I'll just tell you that you can just, if you have a good idea,
right,
like zucchini races.
Or alpaca races.
Yeah, you can apply, and sometimes the Vancouver Foundation will give you money to do the thing.
Alpaca death match.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Will they give me money for that?
No, but I don't want to see them die.
I put a knife on this alpaca. It's ready to fight.
No.
Knife packa.
They're already so...
It's like a unicorn, but it's a knife.
Oh, no.
They're so cute.
I don't think animal cruelty would really qualify for that.
No, probably not. I've been reading a lot of, like, ancient history books, so I'm just like, yeah, put a knife on an alpaca. That's a reasonable thing to do. That's how people get their entertainment, Chris. You're like, Katie, we have TV. Oh, fuck, I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
Man, when I read history books, I usually don't end up settling on, we should arm animals.
And make them fight to the death. For our entertainment.
Those who do not learn from history are doomed to have knife packers.
Knife packer. Potential. Just saying.
You can apply for a small neighborhood grant for animal modification.
Animal modification, yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Let the animals choose for themselves. Are you okay?
I just really don't like the idea.
Don't worry.
Okay, well,
I'll get the grant. You don't have to help.
Okay.
What weapon and animal combination would you be okay with?
Duck and a corkscrew.
Oh, they already have that. They're weird, horrible penises. What about like a turtle with a buzzsaw glued to the top of the shell? Well,
it just comes at you very slowly.
Yeah, it gives you tiny nicks, basically.
Oh, yeah, it's an inconvenience.
Yeah. What other kind of animal weapon combination would be good? Crow and...
Well, we already have crows with knives in Vancouver.
Yeah.
That's true. Crow knife. Crow knife. No?
No.
You guys are just leaving me hanging.
I know, I'm so sorry.
You're not coming up with anything.
So how was your week, Katie?
Oh boy, how was my week? A lot of it was just leading up to that that showcase, and then it was not great. And so I was just kind of like, oh, well, that was what I was saving all of my energy for, so I'm going to do a shitty job on your show on Tuesday, Colin. I'm going to not bring my A game. That's not true. I get to do my dirty bits.
You're a goddamn professional, Katie.
Bring whatever game you want.
It's fine. I'm going to bring Settlers of Catan. The least good game.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Thank goodness I didn't wear my Settlers of Catan t-shirt.
No, you're Bill Nye the Science Guy, science rules.
Yeah.
Is he wearing shorts?
Wearing shorts, and he's got a rope.
And long johns.
Long johns.
Yeah.
Says science guy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
He is. I remember, I had a flash memory, because everybody keeps talking about Riverdale, about an Archie comic that they had a Bill Nye knockoff called Phil McPherson the Science Person.
Fucking delights me to no end. Oh my God.
Yeah. I liked it. It was like, oh, very gender neutral, super progressive. Guys, nice work. I loved it. It was good. Yeah. Everybody keeps talking about Riverdale. I'm like, people are dying on this show. Like,
yes.
Riverdale is not that dark of a place in the universe
it's
that I'm aware
so
of.
It's so dark. It's so dark. It's so good. I love a fucking dark, gritty teen. I realize that I like everything.
You like a dark, gritty teen?
Yes. Teen drama.
Okay.
About beautiful, rich people. They've, the CW has relaunched Dynasty. Which is great.
New generation.
Which is great. And I know that I don't have to watch it to have an attitude, but I really like it. I waited until you had water in your mouth.
That was really hard to keep in. You probably shouldn't do that. I mean, this is mostly your equipment.
It's true. But it's good. It's really good.
It's really
good. Everyone's super attractive and sleeping with each other and...
Well, that's what you do when you're attractive, I guess.
And rich and have, like, all kinds of, like, fracking companies and stuff like that. I don't know. It's dramatic and wonderful.
I feel like I there's these TV shows about these rich teens. Mm-hmm. Like, as somebody that grew up in West Vancouver, I'm just like, nah, I'm good.
Are you a rich teen, Colin?
I mean, my family is better off.
So you're a bratty rich teen?
I would say that I grew up around teens that were so bratty and so rich that I, like, recoiled in response to that. Yeah. Like,
you had to swing the pendulum the other way a little bit.
For my first few years of university, like, several times, to me, it was the greatest compliment that anybody ever paid me when we'd be like, oh, where are you from? Like, West Van. They're like, I never would have guessed. And I'm like, swish.
See, I grew up in North Delta, and I was from an upper middle class family, so it was like a little bit, not that I was ever a snooty rich kid or anything, but it just, that was, you could be kind of big fish in that little pond, but in West Van, I've barely ever been there, and I've lived in Vancouver my whole entire life. I went and visited you when you were house sitting. Mm-hmm. That was a weird experience. It has its own bus system.
They have their own buses. Mm-hmm. It's not
very
great.
Bad.
Yeah.
It's basically used exclusively by housekeepers.
Yeah. That's like when I was commuting to work from West Vancouver on the bus, it was just me and a whole bunch of temporary foreign workers, basically.
Yeah, it's and, not just, good. And people that work at Park Royal.
Mm-hmm.
The mall.
See, I'm very familiar with West Van because I grew up on the Sunshine Coast. So you take the ferry in Horseshoe Bay, and then you just go to Park Royal. That was like the closest mall there was, basically. Mm-hmm. To Gibson, so if you ever needed something from the Forever 21,
gotta go to the mall.
But so yeah, so I like West Van. Just I thought that was Vancouver.
Oh yeah, and it's not.
It's very much its own thing. Yeah. What was it like growing up there? Actually, it seems like.
I mean, I was a very very shy child. Just kind of like I kept to myself and was just like generally agreeable.
Is that why you're sitting with your arms crossed right now?
Yeah. Because
you're like afraid we're gonna pinch your nipples.
Gotta protect all your soft organs on this podcast.
Look, this,
we are dangerous women.
This position has come from a lot of practice. Yes.
A lot of like.
Yeah. I know. Like I didn't have like a million friends, but I also didn't like not get along with people and stuff like that. So I was very content just to like hang out at home on the internet, learning about hip hop. Like that was.
I never would have guessed.
Yeah, let's go figure.
That you know everything about hip hop.
My knowledge goes way deeper than it should. It's like if I'd like applied that to like history at the time, then I'd be making my own knife pakas.
So you have your degree in history.
I should.
But you don't.
That would be. I don't.
No. Oh, okay. I thought if you'd spend that much time studying history, so I was like, what did you actually study? Communications?
Oh, no. That was purely me trying to shoehorn in a callback.
Oh, I see.
No, I went to SFU.
I didn't let it go at all. I was just like, I'm going to be a bitch about this.
No, I went to SFU in their design program, interaction design. So.
IAT?
IAT, yes. Mm. That's the stuff.
I'm an advisor there, so I know the lingo.
Mm-hmm. Mm,
everyone's got their acronyms.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So, that's what you did.
Yeah.
Did you like it? When did you graduate?
2013.
Okay, so I was there a year after you, but you're younger than me, right? Like you're 26?
I'm 28.
You have that tiny little baby face. Yeah. It's so soft. Such a soft, soft boy. No, I
that tiny
does it
little...
make you feel? It doesn't seem nice.
No, it's not really very nice, but that's okay.
I get it all the time.
Does that make it better or worse?
No, you zing me so good when you got in today. I can't remember. I said something about, like, the bee that made this honey, his name is, like...
Oh, yeah, you were, like, whatever. Talking about, oh, this bee, the like, which...
His name's, like, Scott or something.
His name is this.
And I was like, actually, all bees that produce honey are female. And Colin said, Katie, take a day off. And I was like, oh, God, yeah, I do need to take a day
That's
off.
That's so good.
I have a lot to deal with, and I'm aware of that fact. So as long as we know our... stereotype that we embody.
Oh, yeah.
That's fine, I think.
We have a baseline.
Yes, absolutely.
So
we have a baseline.
Yeah.
We do from you were the humor editor on The Peak.
This is
and
very
you were
true.
A shrill and you SJW were, bitch.
And I was a shrill SJW, SF Perg, all of the other acronyms.
Yeah.
Bitch. Yeah.
So you guys were a little bit oil and watery?
Yeah, we didn't really meet, even, I don't think. We didn't really ever meet face to face. I would just shit talk you. And I mean, I was working on Slutwalk, I guess, back in 2011, and we couldn't get the Peak to run anything about it in advance, but, like, right after it happened, you guys ran that douche trek piece.
Yeah.
I was like, fucking Colin Sharp, I hate this guy.
What was douche trek?
Douche trek, where they just, like, made a parody of Slutwalk and called it douche trek, and it's like, we need protection for douches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, it was, like...
It was a direct, but it was not a very deep, like...
No, it was not...
It wasn't a beautiful piece of satire.
Yeah, it wasn't cutting in deep. It was just, like, very surface level.
I gotta fill some column space.
here's some dumb jokes about Axe body spray, and let's move it along.
Yeah, I really look back on what I was doing when I was in college, and I was like, oh, man, I was so stressed out that nothing was fun ever. The entire 4 years that I went back to school. Yeah. So I just, like, I could not have a sense of humor about anything. And now I don't care about anything anymore. Which is great. You get out of school for a while and you go full nihilist. You're like, oh, there was no point to any of that. Well, might as well just keep riding it. It's not so good. So, yeah. And then I met you doing comedy and I was like, oh, people change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do jokes about different things now.
I think the big thing is that as some, like, I know all the people that worked at the Peak and wrote for the Peak so well, and even, like, close friends of mine at SFU, they'd be like at my house, and they'd, like, be like, oh, yeah, it was weird meeting Graham Templeton. I didn't know he was like that. And it's like, oh, like, the way the things that people end up having, like, published and who they are were just often just such disparate worlds. I mean, sometimes there was a lot of overlap. But still, yeah, it was... Yeah, it's kind of it was so interesting just to see the different perspectives that people could have on somebody based on some writing in a student newspaper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just so funny to look back on it, because, like, on the one hand, working in the Peak is a lot of work, and they produce some, like, really amazing stories and stuff. Like, there's some really good. My friend Max Hill was the editor for several years, and he's just a brilliant person. And then it's the idea that it's so important when you're doing it, right? Like, when I was doing the activist work and there was, like, any pushback at all, I took it so fucking personally. I was just like, you guys are mean and I hate you and I'm going to write in my blog about it or something. And I just, now I'm like, oh God, that I had that energy to do that.
To care about what?
To care about anything. And then to, like, fight back about other people who are like, maybe it's dumb to care about that or whatever. It's like, it's dumb to care about everything.
Yeah.
Caring is stupid and you should never do it. The end of podcast.
That's a wrap.
So it's a little trait, but tell us how you got started on doing stand-up. When did you start doing that while you were the humor editor, or
was that after? Yes, I think I was still technically the humor editor. I mean from young childhood, I was just, like, a huge little stand-up comedy nerd. Like, start, like, grade 2, grade 3, get home after school, watch comedy at Club 54.
Oh, my God, like, yes! Yeah. Oh,
just watch, so funny, that... watch Ben Guyatt go up there.
And... the bad sort of scratch sound of comedy now.
Oh, yeah.
We chat, or whatever it was. Like, I watched it obsessively. Yeah. Do you remember the first, like, special you ever saw?
Yeah. Jeremy Hotz is Comedy Now.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
He's still pretty funny, I think. Yeah. But that was the funniest fucking thing I'd ever seen.
I was, so this is, like, New Year's Eve of, like, maybe 98 or something like that.
Little baby Colin.
And me and my friend James are at my friend Jake's house. We're, like, in the basement and there's this thing on and it's like, I don't know what this is, but this is very funny. He's talking about, like, how there's, like, the one bit in particular that, like, stuck with me was his bit about how the Canadian flag is the least intimidating thing in the world. And just, like,
it's a leaf.
It's a leaf. Watch out for Canada or we'll crumple up and blow away. And there's a whole military bit about, anyways, yeah, like, the Canadian military, what a joke.
He has such a distinctive delivery, like, it sounds like he's really embarrassed of everything he's saying, and so it squeaks out, kind of, and he holds the mic, like, he's
holds the mic
tight
close.
Into him.
His hand is, like, covering his nose.
He feels very vulnerable.
At all times.
He's got a beautiful aquiline nose. Don't cover it up.
But yeah, like, that special at first, and then a couple years later, it was Chappelle, Killing Him Softly, So of course, classic. as a big hip hop fan,
I again still a surprise. Even though you said it several times today, I don't know if I buy it.
What do I need to do?
Can you be any less white than you are currently?
Yeah, I'm tapped out.
Lord, though I have tried. Maybe wearing a science rules t-shirt is kind of...
Yeah, well, when in high school, when I wore fucking football jerseys, despite not being a football player, that didn't work either.
Oh, man. I think I'd be a lot more into hip-hop now if the kid who bullied me the worst in high school wasn't, or elementary school, wasn't constantly wearing a Wu-Tang shirt. Yeah. I was like, Mark, you ruined the Wu-Tang for me. That's unforgivable.
That's a bad move.
It's not okay. So, yeah, you like the hip-hop and you like Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, and anyways, I was, so huge fan of comedy, watching it all the time, just like taking it in. And then, but at the same time, being a very introverted and shy person that would like occasionally make a close friend or family member laugh. And just having, like, no desire to be like, oh, you know what? No, I just like it. I just like it. I like watching it. Mm-hmm. And then being the humor editor at the Peak, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, okay, this is... I'm not, like, directly, like, reading these out loud to people, but I'm publishing these things, and, a lot of people... Katie excluded, are
fuck Colin Sharp.
Are like, oh my god, that's so. They're like, they really like it, and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And then all of a sudden, one of the guys that's like writing comic strips and stuff and sending them in is a guy, Andrew McLaughlin.
Oh yeah.
And we're becoming friends, and then one day he's just like, hey, I know you like stop podcasting yourself. And I'm actually on a show with Graham Clark this week, if you wanted to come. And I was like, what do you mean, on a show? He's like, oh, I am doing stand-up comedy. And I'm like, okay.
You could just do that?
All right. I want to... tell me everything. And so he was like, I was like, oh, where would you go to start? I've been thinking, you know, and he's like, okay, well, there's, you know, he said a few rooms that were going at the time. And, of course, the one that I went to was Kino Cafe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I finally, like, I went on down. I'm like, hi, Steve. Nice to meet you. And Steve runs the place. I was like, I'd like to do it sometime. And he like booked me in 2 weeks. And so like, I went like 2-3 weeks in a row and just watched it. Mm-hmm. And that gave me some confidence.
Right, because you can go to like an open mic and it's just like, I can do better than these fucking jokers.
Yeah.
Not everybody. Yeah. But like, you see a few and you're just like, this doesn't seem as intimidating. I can probably
Yeah,
do
when
that.
You're comparing it to...
Dave Chappelle.
To, you know, Jeremy Hotz's Comedy Now, you're like, oh, I
can't do that.
I can't do that. And then you go and you see somebody who's like... 48 and doing it because their therapist told them it would be a good idea.
Hey, now. Rude. I'm just kidding. So my therapist encouraged me not to do it.
But you're like, oh, okay, so, and then you see someone, like, even the, you see someone bomb and then get off, and they're still just there.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh.
They're not crying.
Yeah.
They didn't set themselves on fire. They didn't spontaneously, like, drop into a hole that opened up in the earth.
Yeah.
I've never had a show bad enough to want to do that after, which feels really good, but it means I'm due.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. I think the only time I've ever really wanted to die was after I bombed in front of Charlie Demers at the Laugh Gallery. I was just, like, so sick that day. Yeah. I was just like, I should have just died. For real.
I had a particularly awful one, like, maybe a year and a half in, doing a Friday guest spot at Laugh Lines.
Oh, it's a rough room.
Yeah, there's people in the scene. It's very much so a halfway between being in lovely nestled Vancouver and being, like, on the road. Mm-hmm. So you have rougher crowds that aren't, like, they weren't like, you know what, like, I love comedy, we should go see it. They're like... Oh, this is a place that has drinks.
Yeah, and it's like, a Friday night, and we're just off work, and we just need to go somewhere.
Yeah. Fuckers. Yeah.
So...
That's my neighborhood, so, I mean, I know a lot about it, but that is how it feels.
So, I get on stage for 5 minutes that feels like 10, and just nothing works.
Absolutely nothing, eh?
And I get off stage and head back to the weird little green room at the back, and the headliner guy, I think he's originally a Canadian guy, but based in Chicago now, Derek Lingvanus, he doesn't say a word. All he does is just hug me.
Oh, no.
It was so bad that he's just like,
oh, that's really sad.
Oh, like, and, this is both comforting and very upsetting.
And I think he did that specific, because, like, it, he even, like, referenced a couple of my jokes on stage. It was, like, very nice that, like, 20 minutes later, he's like, I liked that bit. Like, on stage, he's like, because the audience was crap for everybody that night.
Okay.
So eventually he was just like, nah, look, it's not just because the idiots knew. You, like, I don't like you as an audience. He's like, his bit, it was a good bit. You didn't like that? Fuck.
Fuck you.
But
it's got that Chicago spice on it.
So, anyways, to backtrack to right after my set. So he just hugs me, and then he goes upstage, and then Steve McGowan was hosting that night. And, of course, he was up right after me. And then he comes back to the green room after Derek is already up. And Steve then, without saying a word, hugs me.
Oh, my God.
It remains
hugs
the only...
Hugs from men to,
yeah,
to a man.
It remains the only two times I've just, like, gotten a comforting hug after a bomb.
Oh, boy. That's rough.
Yeah.
That's really rough.
Oh, yeah. But
yeah.
You bounce back.
In theory, you do. I think that if I bombed more, I probably wouldn't keep doing it. But, you know, it's a risk-reward thing. And
if
there's no reward, like, why would you do it? Because we're never going to make money doing these things. It's just so, like, you really have to, like, enjoy doing it to do it. And if you don't, then...
Yeah, and I would love to be able to be, you know... Even to be able to legitimately claim it as a part-time job.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, like, kind of moving towards that. Like, that is the long-term goal and stuff like that. But at the same time, like, I see, you know, comics around town that, like, oh, yeah, they host their weekly show. And, like that's kind of, like, they're not, like, out there touring constantly. But they have their show and they do it. And I'm like, that also looks fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, like, really where I'm at lately is because, like, we're very obsessed with success. What the fuck was that?
Take two.
We're very obsessed as a society with with having an end goal in mind. Like, there has to be some kind of ultimate accomplishment that you want on a path that you're on. And for me, I'm just kind of like, well, sometimes I really don't like doing comedy. Sometimes it's a bummer and I just want to stay home all week. But when it's really good, it's so good. Like, it's so much fun to make new friends in the scene and to, you know, talk shit about people behind their backs and, like, have a new joke really go over. It's, like, the best feeling ever. I've only had that happen once or twice where something brand new just, like, slaughtered right out of the gate. And I was like,
yeah,
I want to do this forever. Have you had that happen before?
Yeah, I just... There's, I find it especially rewarding. What I like is pulling an old joke back that, like, from maybe, like, my first year or two, and being like, sometimes I'll, you know, go through the old notebooks and be like, oh, okay, now that I am not as shitty at this as I used to be.
Yeah, the premise is good. Now we can make it better now with the tools that you've developed over time.
Yeah, and, like, find a way to present it differently. And, even just, like, I think it was just, like, a month ago, like, I brought back an old bit with, like, a new setup, and the setup got an applause break.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, tight.
Oh, you like that? Thank you. Me too. It's new.
I thought of that.
I don't know if you know this. I wrote all of this. This isn't just stuff I thought of now.
Yeah.
Like, I sat down and I wrote this down.
Yeah.
The whole conceit is that you don't think that about me, but I did, you know? This isn't just a splash of brilliance. This is work. Look at it.
Oh, us? We're just chatting.
We're just riffing. Just riffing bits.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
Never come back again. It'll spoil it.
Yeah. Yeah, that really was something that I thought when I was younger, was that comics just talk. And that it seems so natural when someone's really good. Like, it just seems that they're talking. And there are some people who do that and just do crowd work or whatever. I can't imagine ever doing that. I hate crowd work.
I love it.
Do you? You're wrong. You are wrong to love it. I love it when it works well, but it's...
I mean, I never want to force it. Like, I love... What I love is... kind of responding to somebody that kind of puts themselves out there in some ways.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like someone that's heckling.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, oh, you want attention, go away. But like, oh, the person that laughed at a weird point, you're like, what's your deal? Like,
how? Why did you like that bit?
What got you there?
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking at you. I don't think there was whispers at the table. This was about me. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I was just, there was a comic who was trying really hard to do crowd work on my show, which I was hosting and booking. It just was not working, but he would not let it go. Wouldn't let it go. It was like a dog also, with a bone. I was like, please stop this.
Just doing a short set on your show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't do crowd work doing a 10-minute set. Like, come on,
that's
buddy.
That's a little...
Although sometimes when somebody's doing crowd work and it doesn't work, it comes back around to being good again because it's just so tense and uncomfortable. Like, Roman Mancini will do that while hosting a show. Like, hosting an open mic where there's 14 people there and there's only 2 audience members.
Yeah.
He'll just grind on them till they want to leave.
Oh, no.
It's just like, oh, my God, I don't know why you like this, but I hate it. No, I kind of like it again.
Yeah. But in that case, too, he's hosting.
Yeah.
That's, like, his job is to be the... He's the go-between between these two people.
He should make you relieved that another comic has gotten on stage. That's the best kind of host.
Oh, yeah, they set everybody up for success.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, when somebody does it on like any kind of 5 to 10 minute spot, like if crowd work happens, because like this kind of, like the situation I described of like, oh, somebody laughed in a weird place, and you're like, excuse me, you, what's going on there? I'm like, okay, yeah, that came about naturally. But if somebody just gets on stage, hey, so what do you do for a living?
Oh,
you're like,
you on a date?
So you didn't come to this to try to be better. You just came to waste everybody's time.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's, yeah. I guess I'm not good at it, so I'm so terrified to speak to someone in the crowd. Sometimes the people just shout things, and I kind of like it when it happens, and I can kind of just truck over it. That's fun.
Yeah.
Somebody got really excited when I said, I think I said, I was talking about Eliza Schlesinger in one of my jokes, a setup to a joke about vaginas, and I said Eliza Schlesinger, and someone went, woo, in the audience, and I was like, no, this joke is going in another direction.
You're not going to like this.
You won't like this. This isn't a pro joke. But yeah, my favorite, you were there for favorite heckle.
This is exactly what I was thinking.
Which
was
during my joke about being in the brownies and being put into the gnomes as the small group that I get, because like everybody else is in the pixies and the fairies, and they put fucking fat ugly kid in the gnomes. Just not nice. And so I let it hang in the air. I'm like, you know what group they put me in? And this drunk lady goes, the gnomes. And I was like, fuck you ruined it. And then Chris came up to me later. She's like, this is all her brilliance. It was just like, she just wanted to connect with you on this soul level. Like, your soul greets her gnome soul. Namaste. I was like, I hate you, I love it. It's so good. But yeah, like, I don't like it when people yell, but sometimes you can make it funny.
Yeah, and that is, it even, like, that exact example mm-hmm. is, I think it might have been Sunny Dhaliwal years ago. Like, I was doing a bit that kind of did that, like, propose a rhetorical question to the crowd,
mm-hmm.
and Sunny, as somebody that had done enough like club gigs and road gigs for drunk people, was like, I know that most crowds will think that's rhetorical, but
be careful.
Anytime you end a sentence with a question mark, you're just inviting the crowd to respond, especially if they're a little riled up. And I was like, huh, shit.
Just gotta have something in your back pocket for when it inevitably happens.
Yeah.
But the namaste was pretty funny. I was kind of like, fuck.
Oh, that's great.
Blew up my spot completely. That was pretty funny. But my one of my favorite ones that happened recently was at Yuck Yucks for a queer event, and I've been doing this, I call it my Jeff Goldblum jizz joke, and I love it very much. But the setup is really meandering. Like, it takes a while to get to the meat of the joke, and so it's a bit of a risk, but... Yeah. I make fun of the Stormcrow in part of the joke. I just like talk about the Stormcrow Tavern. And a girl
the bit that I brought back is making fun of the Stormcrow.
Oh, shit. We should probably collaborate and find out if it's the same thing. But a girl in the audience goes, I work there. I was like, I don't care. And I just kept going. I'm like, that's nice. I said, that's nice. I don't care. And then just continued to tell the joke. Yeah. And that got one of the biggest laughs that night.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, shut up, you drunk nerd. It's like, I bet you have Settlers of Catan. Yeah. You've got those dumb eight-sided pieces of water on cardboard. I hate you. I hate your whole culture. I belong to nerd culture, and I hate it so much. I'm a self-hating dork.
Yeah, my basic premise is just, it's, and the way that I started introing it was, it's like, oh, you know, decades ago, nerds were, they were hated, and then they were accepted, and now they're, like, and then they became revered, and now they fucking suck.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. It's our fault. We never should have given them their own bars.
That's good.
And then it's a whole bit about how there's so many people that get so stoked about the Stormcrow. And I'm like, look, it's fine. It's a bar. It's cool. But they're like, oh, they're like, we uncracked bars. We figured it's like, no, bars were already cool. Like,
you can get booze there.
Yeah. Like... Like, you didn't
Someone will have sex
something.
With you sometimes from a bar.
But then, yeah, and then, like, the end of the bit is that it's like, oh, it's like, you know, you were sick, you didn't like jocks, and so you avoided sports bars, and then you made your own bar where adults care too much about games.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
That's perfect. My joke isn't about the Stormcrow, it's just very quick
Yeah,
aside.
I never referenced the Stormcrow, but it's
that's
exactly
hilarious.
What I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah. They're putting, a Ludica in my building, Pizzeria Ludica, which is a games and pizzeria.
Okay.
And they're putting it in the basement of my building,
which
is, yeah, I mean, I love Neapolitan pizza very much, everybody.
Yes.
Apparently we have to update our homeowner's insurance because they installed a restaurant.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it like was up in the...
Everything gets set on fire.
I guess. They're like, remember to update your insurance because there will be a pizza restaurant in our building now. I was like, what the fuck? Like, how does that change anything? And also, I'm on the 16th floor on the other side, so I'm pretty sure that I'm not going to get pizza smoke in my house, but I hope it smells good all the time. Just want everything to smell like a margarita pizza.
Margarita pizza.
Margarita pizza. But they're going to have, like, 500 games in there, and apparently they have game sommeliers that will, like, teach you what kind of game that you can play. I'm like, here's the thing. I hate this, and this, and I only like these kind of games. They'll be like, just fucking play Scrabble, you dumb idiot. Or you smart idiot, I guess, if you like Scrabble so much.
Pizzeria and game seems like a bad combo just because, like
just
so cheesy,
factor.
So greasy, yeah.
A greasy pizza, a greasy puzzle.
Okay, what's the shittiest game?
The shittiest game is...
Because I know the correct answer.
Risk.
That's a pretty good answer. Cards Against Humanity.
I disagree that it's the shittiest game. It's a dumb game.
And I love Risk, so you're wrong.
I don't like anything that takes 3 hours to play.
That's
it's
true.
Such
it
a
does,
commitment.
Yeah.
It's like Monopoly for smart people who don't know how to have sex.
I think this might also be this... So I almost talked over that. Yeah.
You think Napoleon was good at fucking?
But I think it's the same reason why the people that are so stoked about the Stormcrow are the people that, like, I don't dislike the Stormcrow.
Mm-hmm.
It's that I dislike the excitement about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's I don't necessarily as much dislike Cards Against Humanity
mm-hmm.
so much as the idea that people are, it's dirty.
It's that's so yeah,
that's
the
so
the
true.
Being pleased
and you're, like,
with themselves
so fucking stoked. Just...
Oh, I can actually make racist jokes now because the cards say so, and it's a really fun way for me to get, like...
Just, like, you make a dirty joke with apples to apples, and you've got my back.
Like, I will... I've made apples to apples very... I made cranium filthy sometimes. Oh, scatagories don't even get me started. It's just jizz left and right. I don't know how you play games.
Scatagories does kind of sound like a disgusting sex act.
That's why I was like, jizz everywhere, just scattered. So the worst game is Cards Against Humanity. You're right, though. It's like people get so pleased with themselves about being bad little boys. Like, oh, look at us. Look at us. We're like cheating on our ethics diet right now.
Yeah, it's just none of it's creative.
No, but there is someone made like this online... I guess, emulator for a card game for Cards Against Humanity, and I can play with my friends who live in the UK.
Okay.
And so every year when Christmas rolls around, we'll all get on and play, because, like, the time zone difference, they'll be awake at, like, 2 a.m., because they're at their parents' house.
Right.
And so we'll play Cards Against Humanity online, but it's, like, you get your own special decks. You can, like, take out certain things or put in certain things, and it's just, like, we don't make it dirty. It's just supposed to be, like, how funny can you make it?
As soon as you start controlling it, it's, like, it's a very fun construct for a game. I just don't like the literal cards that they have, right? Because,
Like, oh, big black dick.
Yeah. Ooh. Oh. And because me and my friends in, especially in, like, first and second year university, would play Things, which is essentially Cards Against Humanity, except with no pre-written cards. It's just everybody has a piece of paper and a pen, and they rip the shit off and put it in.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. And so you're just coming up with your own, like... You're saying things you wouldn't want to find in your morning coffee. This was an
actual... This is basically Family Feud.
And then you're just going around coming up with your own bullshit answer to try to make people laugh.
Okay, so this is like a cross between Family Feud and Balderdash, sort of. Yeah. Like, which sounds amazing, honestly. Yeah. Like, I love this game.
And you're playing
already.
You're playing with, like, a fun group of people, and it's like, it can get real dirty. Like, if you're my friend Al, and you think that it's funny for the third time to put the answer placenta in.
Oh, Al's a wild card.
Al's a wild card.
He's like, yeah, get that shit encapsulated and eat it. You'll regain energy after the birth of your child. So say some midwives. Al, you're really informed about this. I live next to pomegranate. It's not a big deal.
I'm just imagining him taking out the little piece of paper and then just unfolding it and unfolding it to keep reading. They're like, oh, yeah, and you pill it, and then with the help of a midwife, and why is this so...
You know, some doctors debate the veracity of this treatment, but...
My acupuncture place has an ad for a placenta encapsulator, and it's just eatyourplacenta.ca.
.com was taken.
You gotta know that it's a Canadian based business. That's very essential.
Eatyourplacenta.biz.
Oh my god, everybody's doing it these days.
Oh,
oh fuck. Yum. Let's take it with your fish oil.
I ran into a friend of mine who's a new midwife. She's doing her practicum placement or whatever. And she's like, yeah, I just got back from a water birth at St. Paul's. And I'm like, oh, I didn't think that they do those there. She's like, they don't. It was an accident. Oh. The woman was just having, she was taking a bath. And then suddenly she was just like, well, the baby's out of me.
Oh, my.
Things just went a little sideways.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. You know, Chris is a doula, a lapsed doula. Lapsed Catholic, lapsed doula.
Yep.
We were talking Halloween costumes, because we're sort of trying to do a Halloween episode around your episode that we are recording now. We're really peeling back the curtains.
Right. Stop talking about the process on the podcast.
The podcast is about the process, Chris.
Laying bare the work.
Absolutely. Chris was a cardinal. And people were very unsettled by her. I
triggered a lot of people's, like, Catholic nightmares.
Oh, yeah, Catholic
My costume was too good.
Yeah, it was very compelling. I saw it and was like, Yeah.
Compelling as in the power of Christ compels you?
Yeah, but bid me make confession, please. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been 33 years since my last confession.
Did you go to Catholic school?
No. Ah. I did go to whatever class they make you do.
Catechism?
Not Sunday school, but CCD, whatever the fuck that was, on a Wednesday. I didn't like it. I argued with our priest a lot.
She got blessed by Pope John Paul II.
Twice.
Oh, twice.
Yeah.
Twice blessed. Too blessed to be stressed.
That's not true. I'm extremely stressed out.
Anyway,
we were talking about your comedy journey.
I don't know. And then we got onto placenta.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that does mean that we have traced the full path.
Yeah, if you've gotten to placenta now.
Yeah, your early days of playing this game, you know, picking up the weirdest shit that you can, to being on stage, thinking up the weirdest shit that you can.
Yeah.
How long was it between your first stand-up performance ever and when you started hosting King's Head?
Oh, yeah, because you now run a... You were saying, like...
Yeah, we've done a couple shows now.
Yeah, okay.
Was King's Head your first?
Yeah, King's Head was the first one that we ran.
It became pretty legendary. I never got to do it, but That's life.
I think, yeah, that was just you. You started
like pretty
close to the end of it.
Yeah, I don't think I started more than a year before it ended. So,
so we started King's Head in maybe July of 2014.
Okay.
And so the first time I had done stand up was, I guess, a little over 3 years earlier.
Oh, wow. So you started in 2011?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I just talk like the chicken lady from Kids in the Hall all the time now, I guess.
Just do whatever's comfortable for you.
Wow, chicken lady.
I had... Wow.
You guys are silly.
We like attention.
I had been like semi-responsible for like maybe two one-off shows before that. Like there was a time when like every few months at Goldie's, it was like one newer comic would like run the show, you know, and like come on down, and it would be like their one go to like invite all their friends to a thing on a weekend.
Right.
But yeah, I hadn't really like run shows before King's Head, so me and James started that up. It ran for 2 years, and then we spent...
People loved it.
It was dope. It was
dope.
It was a lot of fun.
Because you're dope, and you have a dope life, and you do dope shit, right?
It was just, it was a very nice combination of factors that all like went into it, right? Because there was, me and James are both like, you know, local people that had our own networks outside of comedy to invite to, like, the first few shows. Mm-hmm. And we made sure that we, like, it was just, like, especially for the first, like, 4 or 5 months, it was just, like, book the strongest acts no matter what, only that. Like, it was, like...
And just establish it as, like, this is a good place to go for comedy, even if you don't know the folks, it's going to be...
Yeah, we never, I mean, and to this day, like, we don't really sell our shows on the headliner. We just kind of like...
It's just a good showcase.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, a lot of, like, I mean, and to be frank about it, like, a lot of times nobody knows who that headliner is, even if they're fucking hilarious. Yeah. Like, there's only a handful of people...
Who know anything about local comedy.
Yeah, and even, like, within the local comedy, like, only a handful of people that would actually have, like, draw, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we're just like, oh, let's just make it a fun show. Let's make it cheap. Like, there's certain people over the years that have been like, you know, especially at King's, they'd be like, you know, you guys could charge more than $5 for it. And I'm like, well, then I think people, nobody would feel like they got ripped off, but they'd probably be like, they wouldn't be as inclined to come every week.
Yeah, if you if you charge more than $7 for a weekly show, people won't pay. Like they'll pay $10-$12 for a monthly, but not weekly.
Yeah. This and you know, if somebody pays $5 and then I mean at King's Head it was like beers, cans of beer were $3.50 and now at Full Pint, like a full pint is only $5.50. So it's like when you have when
what's
people
the name of the show?
What?
Yeah.
I just got it. Just kidding. I already knew what it was.
But,
your facial expression was so strange. For a second, I thought you were listening, like, something bad was happening, like, outside or, like, downstairs. Like, it really, that unsettled me quite a lot.
Sorry. I'm your cardinal.
But yeah, so we just like the idea that, like, oh, somebody can come to the show, have a bunch of laughs, and have, like, a little bit of buzz on and have paid
$17.
Yeah. And then, like, they're like, oh, yeah, now they're telling all their friends about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that was, like, 100% our whole thing going into it. And
with your mission statement.
Yeah. With the King's Head being in a nice little neighborhood in Kitsilano, a lot of people can walk to it and stuff. It all just kind of worked out. Nice. So.
Yeah. But then it all got fucked up. Everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked.
The Fire Nation?
Sorry, I was thinking of Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Right, okay.
You know how it goes. But they did a reno, and then they just fucking dropped it, hey?
Oh, so the renos happened because the place got sold. So it was new owners, and the new owners were very supportive of comedy, and they wanted to bring it back. And so we were like, sure, sounds good, we'll try it out. But then just with, like, every little change they made the show worse. And so it was us that pulled the plug.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So... After 6 shows back, we were like, yeah,
it's
no.
It's not doing it the
that's
same
too
way.
Bad. And the room was totally changed around and stuff like that, or?
I mean, when you walk in, it doesn't seem like drastic changes, but it was, I mean, I think the big thing that happened was we used to nestle the stage up kind of right in front of this brick wall at the back there.
And classic. There was, classic comedy
bit. And it was kind of, And, like, have you been there before?
No, I don't go to Kitsilano if I can avoid it.
Yeah, fair.
No disrespect, it's just really fucking far.
Oh, yeah. From here, what am I going to transfer?
From New West.
It's from New West,
yeah,
too.
That's
yeah,
that's where I live.
Yeah.
So it's bloody but, far.
But it's a weird little indoor tree fort of a place with, like, weird, like, levels and stuff like that.
So sound but bounces and...
Sound bounces a little bit, but it all kind of, like, does sort of funnel down to this one spot in front of that brick wall. And the area right in front of that had, like, a couple booths and some low tables and stuff like that. And it kind of worked out nicely because it meant that even on the nights where we didn't have as high of an attendance, like, 25 people would fill up that lower area. And you'd be like, oh, this is the show. Like, mm-hmm. And it all kind of, like, was very self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't let itself get spread out like crazy. Right. So it felt fun. But then one of the things... To me, this is the big thing that screwed up the room was they replaced right in front of the stage with a raised communal table.
Mm.
So...
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, oh, yeah, like, one of the big, like, you know, psychological things behind making a comedy show work is, like, get things low, get things intimate, and make audience members feel anonymous so that they feel comfortable laughing. And now we've stuck the entire front area of the crowd... 16 people are at one table besides strangers.
Mm. That is the problem we're having at my room, too.
Yes.
Yeah, and they won't let us change the tables around, so.
Yeah, whereas at Grand Island Brewing, they're like, they let us change the tables around, so now.
They let us do whatever we want. Our cool new stepdads are rad.
But yeah, they've been so great there. They, like, they rearranged the room.
It surprises me that they're so flexible, because they're, like, a very, like, branded organization, like they're a big deal, like their beer is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We had
their
to get
beer goes everywhere. It's like the first craft brewery we had, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, so yeah, late '80s, mid to late '80s, something like that. It was like the first local brewery that wasn't just like the big Molson factory.
Yeah, that you can smell for miles.
Yeah. Wort.
But yeah, so it's. It's a little bit of an extra challenge getting people to, like, make the commitment to going to Granville Island.
Mm.
Even though, like, when you're actually going there, it's like, oh, this is easy to get to.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's right beside a bus stop.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a trek down kind of thing. But
it feels more like an event.
There's a psychological distance a little bit for Granville Island.
But the pub is usually pretty full, is it not? Or...
Not at night.
Oh, okay. Because so I guess every time I've gone by there, there's been, like, a lineup out the door, but I only over there during the day.
Yeah, so. It's... pumped full during the day with tourists.
Mm-hmm. That good tourist dollar.
Good tourist money. Yeah. But, I mean, the shows have still been going good. We're just, we're hoping to get it back up to Kingshead levels at some point.
Yeah. It's, nice. Running a show is just really, it's challenging. It just keeps happening. You're like, oh God, another one.
Yeah.
It's so much. Yeah, I get tired. Sometimes I think about stopping, but then I also love it. It's the same thing. It's the same thing I feel about doing comedy. Like, I like organizing things, too. Like, I like being in charge of stuff. I like getting to decide who talks. The power.
It's when you're talking about putting a venue together, it makes me want to, like, run a venue. I think that would be really fun to, like, how can I make it, like, the perfect venue for comedy so that people will actually like performing there and people will actually like to come
in? Yeah, you get it super perfect. It would be the best place ever. It would run for a year and then somebody would buy it out and turn it into a condo. That's how that would work.
Shit.
It'd be like, wow, this thing is really, really, like, fortifying our community. What a wonderful space. Oh, condo it!
And that's, like, one of the reasons why we're stoked to be at, like, Granville Island Brewery, because it's like they're not
gonna get bought out.
They're not selling their spot. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it comes with its own challenges and stuff, but it's like it's a small bar that wants to bring people in, but it's also not a struggling small business.
Yeah.
So there's some flex there, which is nice.
That's good. Got it. So the variabilities or variables, I guess is the word I'm going for.
Variabilities, let's do it.
Sure, just add a couple extra useless syllables in there. But it can be so, there's just so much to think about with everything, you know, and it's
like your show, like management changed and there's different stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
that's more formalized now and it's a little bit more difficult to get things, but I can get things in writing instead of just like a vague promise. Mm-hmm. So it's just different. Yeah, it's It's a thing I think comics should have to do for a bit, is they should probably... But everybody has their thing that they think comics should do. You should go on the road, you should bomb, you should do open mics constantly, you should be performing 3 times a night, you should...
Yeah.
It's like...
But having the experience of actually running a show maybe will make you better about how you, like, act on other shows or something like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, treating the booker nicer.
Well, yeah, and just, like keeping my own records and, like, knowing where I have to be when I have to be and having a consistent calendar, whereas there are some people who are just like, whoa, I forgot, I'll be there as soon as I can, you know? Yeah. And those people are not our favorite people. So I try to be as organized as a performer as I do as a showrunner, but it's just hard, man. It's tough because you really don't make money doing it. You have to be content to eat social capital all the time, pretty much, because that's what you get for doing it. It's people like you, people want to work with you, mm-hmm. and that's very important.
Yeah.
But it does not buy you full pints of anything.
No. We get a couple free beers.
Ooh, at the I like show. Your little shimmy.
Yeah,
I get my little free beers sometimes. It's pretty cool.
Oh man! And so, what day is this full pint comedy show? Is it every
single Tuesday.
Oh, very nice.
Doors at 8, show at 9.
Nice. You can listen to our podcast in the morning and then come to your show at night. Boom. Tuesdays are amazing.
What a wonderful way to spend a day.
Yeah, get a life, guys, if that's what you're doing. That seems like a waste of your time. Just kidding, do it. Do it, consume us.
Eat what we make. Katie's please. Into Vore now.
Katie's into Vore now. Well, this is going to come out next week, so it'll be after me doing your show, so I can't promote it for my sake. Just go anyway. I'm very excited that the theme is werewolf bar mitzvah.
Oh, yeah.
Spooky, scary.
Boys becoming men. Men becoming wolves. Well, with that.
That's my favorite. All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Colin.
My absolute pleasure.
Very, very nice to chat with you. I've only met you one other time before when we hung out with Todd Glass. For a very short amount of time.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I don't know any of these people. They're just like all these like good comedy boys.
And they're all a little mean.
I have a hard time hanging out with comics because I'm still a little bit soft. I can't take it. I'm like, you guys are all so mean to each other. And to me. Like,
there's certain groups of comics that I like. I'm like, it's like, even if I'm friends with them, just there's certain combinations of people where I'm just like, all of a sudden I'm just like, well, I'm just quiet. I just don't mesh with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this tone
you
and
go back
speed.
To your introvert child
yeah, like I can't,
state.
Like, whatever wave you're pushing out, I can't ride this one.
No, I need to take my boogie board back to the shore now. That's how I feel 100% of the time.
I think I need to reapply sunscreen, guys.
I'm getting a little toasty. See you in a bit.
All right.
You get into your little cabana and take a nap. Because it's just tiring out there.
Yeah. I can't well, tuck. I get tuckered out.
It's like I just get so tired sometimes. anyway, but you're very nice and very funny. Yeah. Thanks for doing our show.
Is there anything else you want to plug other than your weekly?
Oh, just yeah, come to the show. I mean, I'm on your Twitters and your Instagrams and all your things if people feel like doing that. But come to Full Pint. That's the thing. Yeah. It's a fun place to be.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, right on. All right. I have nothing to plug. Do you?
Nope.
Cool. Bye.